And I'll tell you this from the military side, because I've got lots of contacts, obviously, in the military side in Russia. Oh yeah, the generals want a big arrow movement, and it's not just the generals; it goes all the way down. Everybody wants that victory splash forward, the big attack. So yeah, there's got to be massive pressure on the Kremlin right now from the military, from the conservatives, just whack these moles and get it over with.
Well, I mean, I think if there's one thing that this conflict has demonstrated is that the rules of war have changed. I think the era of big maneuver warfare against anyone who has drone capability, which could even be non-state actors at this point, right? If they get involved enough with it. Drones have really changed the face of modern warfare, right? Drones, precision munitions, and 24/7 drone and satellite surveillance. You simply can't build together a critical mass of troops or equipment for a big push without them being identified and targeted immediately, which is why both sides in this conflict are now using infiltration tactics, both for offense and for counterattacks. And it would really shock most people to understand how small the number of troops is that are engaged on the front of actual physical human troops right now that are engaged on the front lines at any given time is. Because it is. I mean, the amount of troops that are actually engaged in what you would consider, encounter battles is very small. At the same time, because of drones and precision strikes, there really isn't a tactical rear anymore,
No, there
right?
isn't.
It's almost to the point where there isn't an operational rear.
I've been in a tactical rear, and I've been on the edge of the operational rear, and I've had drones over my head, enemy drones. So yeah, it's. But I'll tell you, on the defensive side for the Ukrainians, the problem too is they don't control the air, and clustering anything more than three or five troops in one small area is a FOB. It's a FOB. Sooner than later there will be a FOB, and there'll be a big crater, and you can't put a platoon into a line anymore because there's not going to be left anything left of that platoon. One, two FOBs, and that's it.
It's we heard so much ridiculous propaganda bullshit about one Wunderwaffe, about the next Western wonder weapon that was going to win this war. Well, we have known what the real wonder weapons of this war are from the beginning, and they're the FAB, the Garand, the Lancet has played a big role along the way. These are the systems that have even the Sunsepolk have particularly with the extended range have really changed the nature of this conflict.
Well, there's one more. The 3 to 5 man fire team that's breaking through and taking that objective that used to be taken by a platoon.
The infiltration tactics. Yeah, again, people keep wanting, again, big arrow offensive. They want big dramatic results and they want tanks and troops, and I don't know if that's really possible anymore.
It may be with Ukraine because it's just so weakened at this point, and
It's
along a lot of
getting there.
lines.
It it's getting there. And but
A year ago, absolutely not.
No, there, well, people have been talking since the beginning of this conflict. Some people, some well-meaning cheerleaders, I would say, some of them with military and intelligence backgrounds, who predicted, that the entire thing would be over 2 months and have reliably predicted that every 2 months since then, that the Ukrainian army was about to big C collapse and everything. And you know, cheerleaders have their place. That's not to take away from that. You know, morale important, information warfare, and everything. But you know, serious analysts, I think, need to have a little more honesty, or a little more, shall we say, realistic assessment of how things are really on the contact line, on the battlefield. And Russia can have every advantage, and they do have every advantage, from artillery to drone quantity to drone quality to fabs, you know, air superiority, manpower, logistics, manpower, everything. It's still a hard slog, because
It
ultimately
is.
you have to clear every building and every friggin' room, and it takes time, and there is still a cost involved. And people want the war to be over yesterday, and there's a lot of well-meaning armchair quarterbacks out there who continually get frustrated by the pace of things.
And
And,
the worst part about it too is we're fighting ourselves. And the other side are Russians, who even if slightly de or radically demented, but they have the exact same stubbornness, the same
they do.
creativity.
Yeah,
And we're,
that's a
if this were
very valid.
French or Brits, even Brits, they would have broken by now.
Yeah,
They would have absolutely broken by now.
they're Slavs, and more than Slavs, they're, you know, other than Galicia, right? They're
Yeah.
essentially Russians, right?
Yes. And just a stubborn, blockheaded when it comes to that. Just I don't want to surrender. Just because.
Endurance and suffering. And it is always amazing to me, because we know that now by far the majority of the Kiev regime's troops are press ganged, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a quite, I mean, maybe at the beginning that was only somewhat true. Now it's completely, but they still will fight when cornered in a hole, and they have to fight and defend the people next to them, and so forth. Now, part of that, of course, is, you know, the judicious use of the peppering everything everywhere with Banderites who will shoot anyone who surrenders at the first opportunity, and blocking units and the like. But still,
Methamphetamines play a big game, a big role of that too. Combat drugs.
there's that. But yeah, the endurance, the willing to endure suffering, it is a trait of the Eastern Slavs
Yep.
that you know, is beyond what certainly modern Western cultures would be able to endure.
Absolutely.
They
But
don't
wait,
have the warrior ethos.
going into this whole drone point, the Israelis are having a big problem in their newly annexed province of southern Lebanon because the Hezbollah just doesn't agree with it. So the Israelis have launched their big push, and they've lost or have had damaged about 100 Merkavas of various models
Yeah, I've
by
seen that.
drones. Have you noticed those Merkavas have no grills on them, no nothing? It's like they came out of storage and we just ignored the last 4 years of drone warfare. It doesn't exist. And they just charged up with them.
And the Americans are obviously the same way. I mean, they are
Yeah.
completely unable to deal with, you've seen the videos, I'm sure, like I have, of FPV drones just trolling through Victoria
Yes.
Base trying to
Yes.
find something worth hitting, completely uncontested.
Oh yeah, that's what killed me the first day in the Qatar base, where you had the secondary radar system and you had that old jihad drone with that moped motor going ju -ju 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 -ju. It's slow, it's flying in, it goes gracefully up, it comes right back down, takes out the whole radar bulb, and nobody's shooting at it. Not light arms fire, not a stinger, nothing. It's just got free range. Do whatever you want. There's no air defense of any kind, even small arms air defense. Nothing.
It is amazing to me, because I mean, we know that there are levels of the US military and intelligence that are fully engaged in what's going on in
Right,
Ukraine, right?
right.
The CIA has been running their drone program, right? They openly admit that. The attacks on oil refineries, the attacks on shipping, the CIA bragged in the New York Times that, yeah, we're in charge of all that. But when we're down to the actual military writ large, obviously no lessons have been learned. Nothing has been evolved. Nothing has been instituted or institutionalized. Nothing. I mean, maybe that's because they have not felt any real pain over
They
the
are
last
now.
4 years, right? So they were able to fight their comfortable little proxy war against Russia and not worry about lessons learned and how fast warfare was changing with new technology. Well, now the price comes due. And where Iran and Hezbollah are now, I would say is still a year, 2 years back from where the conflict is right now. But that's still a decade ahead of the US at this point. We keep hearing about these war games that are conducted with NATO, with Ukrainian troops, especially drone units involved. And there was this Operation Hedgehog last
Right.
year that we found out about, and there have been repeat of them. And small Ukrainian units with drone components continually best and just obliterate, just humiliate much larger numbers of much, ostensibly much better equipped, in the old sense, the old maneuver warfare
Right.
sense of the war, in war games. And the Ukrainians are like, yeah, we don't want NATO training anymore.
That's a hindrance.
First of all, if we have NATO and train, if we have training in NATO countries, all our people run away and go AWOL, right? We're
There's
right. There's that, but
that.
there's also the point that
50%,
it's not permanent.
50% desertion rate.
And actually, Ukrainian commanders have been saying that since 2023, that they have nothing to offer us, right? And it's the Russians and the Ukrainians, right? In the broad sense, that are learning from each other right now. I mean, that's where the conflict is. And so it's not a matter of just stubborn endurance and sacrifice. They are innovating warfare on both sides at
Absolutely.
a truly cruel and brutal pace. There is no morality to this war. It is bloody. It is nasty. Russia does have some rules of engagement. A lot of those have gone away over the course of the war. Some are still there. The Kiev regime has no rules of engagement,
It didn't from day
right?
one.
Yeah. And so.
But I watched the Gotland exercise and these other NATO exercises in 25. And what do you see in all of these? And you're right. You see tanks going in, the infantry
Lining
piled
up
up
and
behind the
assembling
tank,
up.
one drone away from having mass casualty. No grills, nothing. And on top of that, in Rhein-Main Air Force Base last August, I saw the advertisement for it. They were advertising for people to come out and see the U.S. Army drop a grenade from a drone for the first time. 2025, August 2025, we'll
You
drop our
remember
first grenade.
Hegseth's ridiculous drone propaganda videos
Oh
last
God,
year?
with a mop handle. I mean, if you're on the front lines anywhere on there, you've got to be dying from laughter looking at that. I guess they're gonna find out soon enough, though, if they land the Marines on any of those islands. They're all within FPV drone range, 50-kilometer range. Every one of those islands within drone range.
Stanislav, can I be perfectly honest with you?
Shoot.
I really hope they do. I'm salivating at the prospect. I really hope they're that stupid.
I used to serve with these guys, obviously. Well, not these guys in particular, but
Me too.
and I feel sorry for them, because they're being sent on a suicide mission. It's a meat grinder. I feel sorry for those guys. I don't feel sorry for their commanders. I don't feel definitely don't feel sorry for any American politicians, with a very few exceptions. They're sending them to die. They're just sending them to die for the ego of a baboon that doesn't know how the hell to get himself out of the mess he's gotten himself into.
I see. I have to object to that characterization because the baboon is a noble animal.
I'll apologize to all the baboons out there.
Thank you.
Macaca.
On behalf of the baboons, I accept your apology from the slur of comparing them to the President of the United States.
Was as good as when the president of Uganda came out when somebody said that Ukraine, back in 21, Ukraine now is as poor as Uganda. He came out, whoa, we're much richer than these people. By the way, speaking of Uganda, Uganda's now threatened to attack Iran for Israel.
The what's next, Somaliland? It's just amazing that, I mean, are these people not paying any attention to what's going on?
I'm not quite sure how they're going to reach Iran, but they've threatened to join the war.
It not only is the US really just humiliating itself, right? Through not learning the lessons of conflict, having no strategy for what they're doing. But at a diplomatic level, I just saw a video that just absolutely shocked me just a couple hours ago. It was Donald Trump speaking about Mohammed bin Salman, the Crown Prince of Saudi
Oh
Arabia.
God, I saw that.
Now, whatever you may think of Mohammed bin Salman, I remember calling him affectionately Mohammed bin Bonesaw.
Wannabe.
And I'm not so sure now. I had thought that over the last few years he has somewhat evolved and matured as a statesman. But again, whatever you may personally think of him, he is the de facto leader and will be the leader for decades of the largest and most important U.S. Arab Gulf state ally, right? The
Absolutely.
home of Mecca, right? An oil export, all of that. And the President of the United States said he didn't think he was going to have to kiss my ass. He didn't think this was going to happen. Well, now he has to kiss my ass. He has to be nice, and he'd better be nice to me. This is the way diplomacy is done by the United States now. I mean, again, like with the baboons, comparing Trump to a mid-tier mafia thug or warlord would be a disservice to the honorable Italian American organized criminal organizations and others and their personnel over the history of the United States. The complete collapse of anything even resembling diplomacy. I mean, it's great. I mean, I'm always shocked and horrified by it. But then, I have to remind myself, oh yeah, I'm comfortably sitting outside of that for the last 2 decades, and it's the opponent now, and I should just celebrate it. But all of this is going to have consequences, right? Whenever they're not looking and out of the line, all of the countries of the world are rightly remembering all of these little slights, all of these blackmails and threats and humiliations. I mean, I certainly had no love for the Blinken Sullivan administration, right?
No,
Or any of
none.
the administrations before that. But my God, this administration is atrocious. It's
They've actually, I mean, I'm actually wondering, would Harris have been better? This is how far we've gone. This is, and I can't stand Harris and Biden and all of these idiots, but and
The
now you're
only
going.
difference there is Harris might have continued the Biden policy of firing ballistic missiles into Russia, and we might already have had nuclear Armageddon by now. I mean,
True
that's
enough, true enough.
and in that respect, the lack of ideological, at least, hatred of Russia by Trump and his megalomania may have inadvertently diverted us away from impending nuclear Armageddon on one level and put us into a situation in the Middle East where the US hegemon is facing possibly a more potent strategic defeat than they were facing, than still are facing with Russia and Ukraine.
True, very true. Well put. Very well put. Now, of course, you know the insanity is doubled though because you've got Tel Aviv. I mean, you had a spokesman for IDF who was threatening to basically off Russian politicians because
Oh yeah,
we
I
see
saw that.
everything. We have
I
control over your internal systems. Are you seriously making that threat? You know, a country that could be a Russian tactical nuclear warhead that's only 75 kilotons, you know. 2.5 Hiroshimas could wipe you off the face of the earth. Do you really want to go down that road to threaten them directly with murdering off the politicians and the leaders
But Israel can probably get away. Israel can probably get away with saying shit like that and even doing some stuff, and Russia wouldn't respond. Why? Because Russia is perhaps too mature a leadership, too much the adult in the room, too long-term thinking, right? Too much strategic patience, at least at a gut level. Maybe at a state level, we want that cold-blooded, passionless ability to just shrug all of that like water off a duck's back, like the Chinese do on an even greater level. I was like you, I was born in the United States, right?
Oh no, I was born in Lugansk.
Oh, so you were born in Lugansk. My
Yeah.
apologies.
I'm
My
straight out of the
apologies.
answers, sir.
Okay, so you were direct. All right. So, but you did spend a great deal of your life in the United
half
States.
of
And
it.
right. So, but there is an Americanness ingrained in my mental DNA that I know I'll never be able to replace, right? I will never be a Ruski mujik, right? I just it's not there. But there's an American that wants a gut knee-jerk response to all of this.
Oh, believe me, most Russians do too.
Do. But
They really want a knee-jerk reason up
the
the
Russian
teeth.
political leadership is more restrained,
Yes.
and the Russian military leadership is extremely pragmatic and methodical.
Yes. Absolutely. The science of war, not the art of war, the science of war.
The science, yes. And almost the industry of war at this point.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what I always love. Oh, Russia is on a war economy. No, 6% of GDP is not a war.
No,
40% of GDP, that's a war economy.
that's a fantasy of Western media that I have no idea what's actually going on in this country.
You imagine if Russia was on a full war economy right now? I mean.
No, I have no idea what that would look like. Nor does anyone in the US know what that would look like in the United States.
That'd
The
be like
situation in Russia is only marginally different on a level of how it impacts the daily lives of Russians, this 4-year conflict, as it was for Americans during Gulf War One and Two, meaning it doesn't impact their daily lives in any real credit, way.
Well,
And
there's an added, I will make a difference. There is a difference. I remember very well because I was serving and I was actually taking some university courses. So I was done with the university courses in the, early in the morning, and I was driving in when 9/11 happened. And I was listening to, I didn't even know 9/11 happened because I was listening to music on a disc. And I walk in and everybody, I'm like, hey, how everybody doing? And everyone's looking at me like, what the hell? I'm like, whoa, what happened? And then, oh, and the little television set, and everybody's around the television set. It's like, got it. What happened to the rest of America? Everything shut down. Everybody ran home. All the schools closed down, and every single tiny little village and hamlet, wherever it happened to be, all the politicians, everybody ran home. They were all scared. You don't get that in Russia. You got drones striking into a residential building. People go, we'll get those bastards. Keep going. And society just, yeah, okay. And it doesn't have the same effect.
there is a, well, Russians have been through the 90s. They've been through the Chechen Civil War. They've been through the terrorism that was produced by that for a decade plus, right? They've been through the economic suffering, right? Several Great Depressions rolled together in the 90s.
Yeah, I'd say the memory of World War II. I mean, that's ingrained
The
in every
memory of
single
World War II.
family.
But I mean, throughout its entire history, if there's one, if you had to roll Russian national character into one adjective, I think it would be long suffering.
Well, Dostoevsky even wrote about, the suffering of the human soul, You're
There
not suffering, you're not
is a
growing.
reason why Dostoevsky is superior to Tolstoy. If you had to rank authors in every and any conceivable way.
Hemingway and Mark Twain and the rest of them have a little further to go to get up to that level. Maybe Twain, I think, was maybe on the level of Tolstoy, the American version, or maybe close to it, but definitely not on the level of Dostoevsky. I remember struggling as a teenager through The Possessed. That was, well, not teenager, I was, I guess, 19. I was at university, but
When
that
I was a young
was.
teenager, my dream was to one day learn to properly, because I came from a Russian American family that didn't speak any Russian anymore, to learn enough Russian to be able to read Записки под землей, notes from the underground in Russian.
It's yeah, I read Dostoevsky in English. I'll admit that because I was doing Russian lit classes in a U.S. university, and I've got the book. I haven't had the time to sit down and just read it in Russian, and to read it as a seasoned adult instead of a
Yes.
19-year-old going, oh, jeez, I don't, you don't have the depth of character when you're 19, but life just hasn't thrown enough crap in your face for most 19-year-olds that you're more worried about where am I going to get drunk with my friends on the weekend than this long suffering of life. That long suffering usually at 19 is the hangover afterwards. Not, anything in depth and philosophical. So yeah, I definitely need to go back.
I think my extensive reading of Dostoevsky in those early teenage years helped propel me along my teenage goth subculture course.
I was an odd child. I started reading a lot when I was about 12 and a half, 13, and but I didn't go into the teenage books, even the sci-fi. I went straight into the adult sci-fi. The fantasy books, and then one of my favorite books when I was, I guess I was still 12, was Machiavelli, Le Prince. light reading for the average teenager.
Which is worth reading even today, by the
Oh,
way,
absolutely.
for
It's
someone.
human nature. I mean, that's all he is. All he's doing is showing you human nature. Not the best side of human nature, but the reality of it. Yeah, absolutely.
There's
Absolutely.
some people out there that, for some reason, seem to believe that being a cynic in both the modern and the more philosophical sense of the word is a bad thing, and I've never understood that.
Hey, There's the Russian saying, "Всегда может быть хуже." It can always be
Could
worse.
be
That's
worse.
the that, and that's, by the way, how Russians survive any suffering. We just remind ourselves, it can always be worse.
That's actually even more fatalism than cynicism, but the two dovetail together.
It gets us through in the end. Oh, it didn't get worse. Why? Hey, God helped us out. It didn't get worse. Everything will be fine now.
Pleasant surprise if it doesn't get worse.
Yes, you are. Sometimes you're even upset. Like, what? I was planning for so much worse. Which, by the way, was the sanctions, if you remember. When all holy hell of sanctions came out and everybody was
Oh, yeah.
afraid and paranoid, and then they went, that's it?
I remember, right? I still have a, I made a big long because I was using Twitter much more in those days, but a long predictive list at the start of the conflict. And one of them was that however hard the next couple of years would be with sanctions, that Russia would emerge from it decoupled from the West in a better economic position, and then it might be difficult. But the problem, it hasn't been difficult.
Oh.
My wife and I said we need to make a household economic plan. We need to quickly make emergency plans, things that we will do without in progressive layers as the situation gets worse. And we never had to draw on any of that at all.
In 2012, 13, I'm sorry. So I was director of supply chain for Halliburton for Eurasia. And I'm watching the news at the end of 2013, 12 to 13. Let's see, the coup was in 13 or 14? 14.
2014.
Yeah, so 2013, at the end of 2013, I'm looking at the news and I call my procurement teams together. It's like, look, here's everything we're buying from the US that we haven't touched for one reason or another. Find me alternatives because all of this is going to get sanctioned. And chemicals, specialty chemicals, things like that. Actually, we found them pretty damn quickly and saved a lot of money. But it was stuff that, oh, why do you need to look? Because there wasn't that push. The church teaches that God sends you enemies to get you to do the things you should have been doing anyways. So these are one of the things we should have been doing anyways, but we weren't. And I was looking at it like, damn, we need to do this. And yeah, it was actually much easier to do than anybody feared. And you get done a couple months later and go, geez, why didn't we do this a year ago?
Why did Russia ever join the World Trade Organization to
Oh,
begin
that's
with?
a whole different issue. Nobody.
Yeah.
That's a question for Medvedev. Because, and that nobody
Medvedev
understands that.
1.0. Medvedev
Yes.
1.0.
Yes. Okay. Over under your personal opinion on Medvedev, because I can't make up my mind. Is
Yeah.
this the real Medvedev we're
I don't
seeing?
know. I honestly don't know. I honestly don't know. See, the Medvedev that will always be burned in my mind is that moment in the early 2000s of Medvedev when he was filmed doing the shuffle dance to American Boy. And I will never be able to purge that neoliberal pro-Western Medvedev from my mind entirely. And whether he somewhere along the way underwent a true Damascene conversion,
He may
or
have.
whether he is fulfilling a role, the new Zhirinovsky, right? Because Zhirinovsky had to be replaced by somebody.
I've offered, but I haven't taken my position
Yeah,
up on
yeah.
that
I don't
yet.
know. I really don't know. I tell you what, sometime he actually goes overboard even for me now,
Yeah.
which is saying a lot.
The image for Medvedev 1.0 was when he was awarding Pugachova some prize, and he
Oh
was like a
my.
little schoolboy. It's like, put him in shorts and a short shirt, put a little school uniform on him. That's what that burned that image in me. And she's got this disdainful look upon her face toward him. It's just the president of Russia. I mean, she's just a singer with a massive gambling debt, but hey, who's counting?
Wasn't she one of the ones who fled to Israel because she said she didn't want to live in a country that went to war against its neighbors?
Yeah, but she's not Jewish, but her husband, who's like 30 years younger than her, he's Jewish, and now they're living in Cyprus, and they're feeling hard for Israel. You know, their heart flutters, but they're in Cyprus now. Gulkin's got so many criminal cases against him for literally giving money to the Ukrainian military and all this. He can't go back. So, but now they're living outside of Russia, and they're not making much money anymore.
Hopefully justice finds them someday in the form of an ice pick.
Well, no, you know, for people like that, that's not good. Poverty's much worse.
Maybe, maybe, maybe.
On that, Mark, thank you for your time. Thank you, and I look forward to you know, when you get coming over to my place for a cookout.
I'll look forward to that as well. That
Burn
it'll just
some
I'm
meat
sure it'll essentially be the same thing with just some alcohol involved.
and more people.
Yeah,
Well,
maybe.
in live audience, maybe somebody will videotape. So, thank you everybody for joining. I hope you enjoyed it, and we'll have more laughable comment. Well, okay, when we're laughing, just to get this straight, it's laughing through
Black
tears.
humor. Yeah,
Yes,
it's
it's
black
black,
humor.
it's black humor. Now we're gonna have the BLM on our case. Black humor. You're appropriating our humor. So, anyways, have fun, everybody. Have a good rest of your weekend. Cheers.
До свидания.